History Show with Maz Duncan.
This week, we're bringing you a special program on the most tragic period in Irish history, the Great Famine. Eyewitness accounts from the mid-1800s vividly and shockingly convey how it devastated the land and destroyed the people. Our population was decimated, and even today we are the only country in Europe and possibly the only country in the world with a smaller population than we had in the 1840s. We'll be exploring how a famine of this scale actually happened in a 19th century European country, as well as examining the catastrophic effect it had on both our people and our society. I'm joined by Clifton-based historian Kathleen Villiers-Tuttle. Now, the famine probably peaked in 1847, although blight returned in 1848, and there are vivid accounts from the time of harrowing deaths all over the country. This extract, for example, is from a letter dated the 18th of March, 1847, written by Matthew T. Moriarty.
In one of the little villages in the centre of this parish, 20 deaths have taken place from actual starvation up to Monday, the 7th of this month. On Thursday last, a poor man living in it was alarmed by seeing a fire break out in an adjoining cabin, and immediately hastened towards it with the intention of waking and assisting the inmates, when to his horror he found the only occupants, two lifeless bodies, the straw on which they lay lighting around them. They were two sisters of 18 or 20 years of age, the sole survivors of a family of six, all of whom have died within the month from the same cause, starvation. Having succeeded in putting out the fire, he went to inform some friends of the deceased, all of whom refused, through dread of infection, to enter the cabin. The next day, a dog was seen dragging about one of their hands, on which there was made some exertion to procure a parish coffin for the mutilated bodies. But on the Saturday, when they went to collect the remains of both women, a head was also missing, having doubtless followed the fate of the hand.
I suppose it's hardly surprising that dogs would feast on corpses during the famine. But, Kathleen, apparently there were reports of people resorting to cannibalism.
Yes, this was an appalling case that took place in South Connemara when a couple were arrested for stealing a calf, and they were taken to Clifton Jail. This is a husband and wife, and the wife was in a very bad condition when she was put onto this cart, which was an open cart without any straw, no covering, and a very wet, cold day. So for the 12 hours, they travelled up through Connemara, and by the time she arrived in Clifton, she was actually dead. So they said they just literally pulled her off like a dead sheep and dragged her into the jail and dumped her. Now, the jailkeeper was a very humane man, and he thought the whole thing was absolutely appalling. And during the night, when he was talking to the husband, he found out from the husband that they had been in the workhouse in December and dismissed, and then they went down to South Connemara and they all caught fever. And three of the children died. And the husband claimed that the wife had cut off the feet of one of her children and had eaten it. So this was investigated, and the magistrate who investigated felt that there was no truth in it, but the doctor was sent down to examine the area. When he came to the cabin, and he noticed that there was a shallow grave close to the door of the cabin, and when they opened up the grave, they found the remains of two children. The doctor, Dr. Suffield, said that an examination, that the bodies were so deteriorated and had decomposed to such a state that he couldn't tell for sure whether the skin had been torn or had been cut off. So the verdict was open, really, but the magistrate. But I really feel myself that no husband would accuse his wife of eating the flesh of their own children if it hadn't been true.
Story. Well, as many people were probably killed by diseases like dysentery and cholera as by starvation itself, here is an extract of a letter that appeared in the Times from the parish priest of Clifton, the Reverend Peter Fitzmaurice, on the 16th of May 1849.
The population of these parishes, Omey and Ballindoon, amounted in 1845 to 18,000. It now scarcely exceeds 10,000 souls. Since the 22nd of April, there have been in these parishes about 400 cases of cholera, not confined, as in 1832, to the town of Clifton, but reaching every village. In some, there have been 30 deaths in a few days. The nearest relatives abandon each other, so that corpses are found of persons not visited during any stage of the complaint, and remain in a most fetid state, unburied for days. The population is so thinly scattered over a vast extent of country that the few medical men we have cannot visit one case in 30. Terrible though this visitation is, many of the poor hail it as a merciful one from the hands of Providence, as it puts a speedy termination to their protracted sufferings. I hesitate not to state that if this pestilence be not stayed in its ravages by the Almighty, the enfeebled remnant of our population will be swept off the land.
Now, the dead were often buried in unmarked graves, or in some instances just rotted by the side of the road. There are accounts also of people burying themselves alive, and you, Catherine, came across a case of a man accused of burying his sister alive near Roundstone.
This particular incident took place just about a mile outside Roundstone, where the brother came to the neighbours and asked for a spade because he wanted to dig a grave for his sister. The neighbours had seen the sister in the morning, so they followed him down to see where she had fallen. And she had fallen on the beach, and he was digging a hole in the sand right beside her body, which they swore afterwards she was still moaning and breathing. And one of the neighbours asked him, was he going to bury his sister alive? And he said, she'll be dead by the time she goes in the hole. So then he picked her up and placed her in the hole and started to cover up with sand and stones. He said to the neighbours that he couldn't afford to lose another day's rations by coming back again to bury her. Again, this was investigated by John Dopping, who was the magistrate, and he felt that there was probably a truth in it and that the man was really, he was only guilty of the crime out of pure desperation and that the sister was probably dying anyway. And he also felt that the onlookers were just as much to blame as he was himself. But he did state that the people of the area were no worse or no better than any other section of Connemara where the people were scarcely human at that time.